of his windowless basement office in the pathology department. He hung his suit jacket on the back of his chair and pulled off his tie without undoing the knot and opened two buttons of his shirt and sat down at the cluttered metal desk. He liked the familiar smell here, a combination of old cigarette smoke, tea leaves, paper, formaldehyde, and something else, musky, fleshly, that was his particular contribution. He lit a cigarette and his eye drifted again to the paper with Billy Hunt's message on it. Just the name and the number that the operator had scribbled down in pencil, and the words, "Please call." The sense of urgent imploring was stronger than ever. Please call. For no reason he could think of, he found himself remembering the moment in McGonagall's pub half a year ago when, dizzily drunk amid the din of Christmas revelling, he had caught sight of his own face, flushed and bulbous and bleary, reflected in the bottom of his empty whiskey glass, and had realized with unaccountable certitude that he had just taken his last drink. Since then, he'd been sober. He was as amazed by this as was anyone who knew him. He felt that it was not he who had made the decision, but that somehow it had been made for him. Despite all his training and his years in the dissecting room, he had a secret conviction that the body has a consciousness of its own, and knows itself and its needs, as well as or better than the mind imagines it does. The decree delivered to him that night by his gut and his swollen liver and the ventricles of his heart was absolute and incontestable. For nearly 2 years he had been falling steadily into the abyss of drink, falling almost as far as he had in the time 2 decades before, after his wife had died, and now the fall was broken. Squinting at the scrap of paper on the corner of his desk, he lifted the telephone receiver and dialed. The bell jangled afar down the line. Afterwards, out of curiosity, he had upended another whiskey glass, this time one he had not emptied, to find if it was really possible to see himself in the bottom of it, but no reflection had appeared there. The sound of Billy Hunt's voice was no help. He didn't recognize it any more readily than he had the name. The accent was at once flat and sing-song, with broad vowels and dulled consonants. A countryman. There was a slight flutter in the tone, a slight wobble, as if the speaker might be about to burst into laughter or into something else. Some words he slurred, hurrying over them. Maybe he was tipsy.
"Yeah, you don't remember me," he said, "do you?"
"Of course I do," Quirk lied.
"Billy Hunt, you used to say it sounded like rhyming slang. We were in college together. I was in first year when you were in your last.
I didn't really expect you to remember me. We went for different crowds. I was mad into the sports, hurling, football, all that, while you were with the arty lot with your nose stuck in a book or over at the Abbey or the Gate every night of the week. I dropped out of the medicine. Didn't have the stomach for it." Quirk let a beat of silence pass, then asked, "What are you doing now?" Billy Hunt gave a heavy, unsteady sigh.
"Never mind that," he said, sounding more weary than impatient.
"It's your job that's the point here." At last a face began to assemble itself in Quirk's laboring memory. Big, broad forehead, definitively broken nose, a thatch of wiry red hair, freckles. Grocer's son from somewhere down south, Wicklow, Wexford, Waterford, one of the W counties. Easygoing but prone to scrap when provoked. Hence the smashed septum. Billy Hunt. Yes. "My job," Quirk said. "How's that?" There was another pause.
"It's the wife," Billy Hunt said.
Quirk heard a sharply indrawn breath whistling in those crushed nasal cavities.
"She's after doing away with herself."
They met in Beulah's Cafe in Grafton Street. It was lunchtime and the place was busy. The rich, fat smell of coffee beans roasting in the big vat just inside the door made Quirk's stomach briefly heave. Odd, the things he found nauseating now. He had expected giving up drink would dull his senses and reconcile him to the world and its savours, but the opposite had been the case, so that at times he seemed to be a walking tangle of nerve ends assailed from every side by outrageous smells, tastes, touches. The interior of the cafe was dark to his eyes after the glare outside. A girl going out passed him by. She wore a white dress and carried a broad-brimmed straw hat. He caught the warm waft of a perfumed skin that trailed behind her. He imagined himself turning on his heel and following after her, and taking her by the elbow, and walking with her out into the heat of the summer day. He did not relish the prospect of Billy Hunt and his dead wife. He spotted him straight away, sitting in one of the side booths, unnatural.